Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast for Autosport and Motorsport.com. I am your host, Lewis Duncan, and joining me as ever is Oriol Puigdemont from Motorsport.com. And of course, pre-season testing has come and gone. 5 days of running finished. We are now looking ahead to the 2020 MotoGP season. And Yuri is not that long off a flight back from Indonesia, from Mandalika, from what was an interesting test. And we'll get to that in a minute, Yuri. But first of all, I think what everyone kind of wants to know about is the new track. The international street circuit, which is a street circuit in inverted commas, on a very strange kind of remote island. A lot of problems with the circuit, a lot of problems with people catching COVID, sort of not a great advert for Indonesia coming back to the calendar in just a month's time.
I would say not the best perspectives a month before the Indonesian Grand Prix. So, yeah, it was a bit of a shock, to be honest. Everything, not only the track. Of course, the track conditions were, I wouldn't say not the best, but one of the worst I've ever seen. The place itself. I mean, there's no access still. I mean, we were going through the really rural world roads with full of animals. I would say that the town is not ready for swallowing all the MotoGP people, Moto3 teams, Moto2 teams, and all sponsors. And I don't know where are we gonna wanna sleep there. Many COVID positives, so yeah, a bit scary at the moment.
The big topic on Friday was the state of the circuit. There's still a lot of construction work going on around, and that seems to have caused a lot of dirt on the surface, and there was a lot of crashes because of that. The track seems to be breaking up in places, lots of little bits of rubber being flicked off and causing some quite big bruises on some riders. You took a picture of Pecco Bagnaia's arm on Sunday. That looked like a sore one. Even the gravel traps have been complained about. Jorge Martin said it felt like knives when he went into it. So it's not, of course, we have been in the middle of a global pandemic for the past couple of years, but it does seem like this isn't a world championship level venue yet. Obviously, World Superbikes race there and they didn't have too many problems, but a lot of riders from Superbikes have been saying that the track wasn't actually in great condition when they race there either. So it's it's a very strange kind of situation. And I mean, even location-wise, of course, Indonesia is split into lots of different islands and archipelagos, but it's such a weird remote place for such a big championship event. Like you say, 150,000 people will probably turn up in terms of teams, fans and such. And it's very hard to get there.
Yeah, we all know that most of the manufacturers have a lot of interest on this race because it's one of the best countries in terms of sales. But which is clear is that the place is not ready. And then let's see, because there was no grandstand, there was no nothing. I mean, even the service road was full of mud. I mean, it's simply not ready at the moment. Let's see what kind of work can they do in a month. But yeah, I'm really curious to see in what kind of conditions, are we gonna find ourselves in a month.
Yeah, indeed. We'll talk about some of the on-track action because, of course, that's what people are really interested in. And it was an interesting pre-season, of course. It was sort of a return to normal in a sense because we could have full engine development, a lot of big changes made with bikes. I think the biggest change came at Honda. I mean, it's a completely different motorcycle compared to the one we saw last year. And prompted largely by the fact that Marc Marquez couldn't win more races on it than he did last year, Honda knew it had to make changes. And despite a complete radical overhaul, it seems like Honda have done a really, really good job. Paul Espargaro fastest in Mandalika on two of the 3 days. Marquez was really happy with the bike. All riders are very happy with the bike. It seems like Honda is back.
Yeah, it's been impressive, to be honest. I mean, we all know the muscle that Honda has, but the work they've done not only over the winter but during the last year and a half reshaping and remodeling this RC213 has been amazing. And the best thing is that once I try the bike, they say, "Wow, it works." And this sentence has never changed over the last months. But the opposite. I mean, they are more happy and more happy every time. And it seems that the work is safer and also faster. So I think, the other teams, are right to be a bit of afraid or scared about this new Honda. And especially, of course, I wouldn't say especially or only in Mark's hands, because we've seen a super, super, super fast and super confident, Paul. So yeah. Really, really, really curious to see how this bike will perform in Qatar.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if we look at some of the analysis from sort of the Mandalika weekend, I mean, Honda fastest overall in terms of lap time, but also as well on race pace. I mean, Mark and Paul didn't do full 27 lap race simulations, but if you look at the long runs that every manufacturer did, Honda was fast there as well. They did take a bit of a risk with this bike, because of course the thing that Honda has always been kind of avoiding is making too many big changes to its bike that would negatively affect the way Marc Márquez could ride it. And in Malaysia, we sort of saw a little bit of that, because he kind of struggled a lot with the front end. He couldn't quite understand how it worked, and I guess that's still the case. He's still trying to figure that out, but it seems like he is getting to know it better. So there was a bit of a risk from Honda, but it looks like it has paid off, because Mark sounds confident.
We all were a bit waiting to see what was Mark's condition after the winter. But he looks really, really, really good in terms of physical condition. And not only that, but he's been, especially the last day of testing, he told us and also Saturday, that he's been every time bringing the bike to his let's say comfort zone or riding style. So I think that the package looks really, really, really aggressive, and we have to forget about this vision problems, because they are completely fixed now. And he's done a lot of laps. Of course, Sunday he was tired because of the shoulder, but telling a few times that he's doesn't feel himself ready to fight for the win or for the podium in Qatar, but I don't think so. I think he will be ready to fight for the podium, especially if we see that the other manufacturers and the other theoretically title contenders, they need to improve, because we've seen Ducati has some problems. We've heard all the complaints about Quartararo and the engine of Yamaha. So I think given all this picture, I could easily see Mark fighting for the podium.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it looks like Honda has, I mean, if you can win preseason testing, it looks like Honda has done that. They have kind of come out with the best package. Yamaha, you mentioned there, of course, we expected more from them after last November at Jerez. Quartararo was very unhappy with the lack of progress made with the engine, and it seems Yamaha hasn't really done anything over the winter to improve that. He told you outright in Malaysia that he wasn't happy at all with the way the bike was when you asked him about it, and that continued into Mandalika. It seems almost like Yamaha has a reverse sort of the problem that Honda had in previous years, that they have a bike that isn't quite good enough for everyone to ride it well, apart from Fabio. And Fabio's having to work really hard. I mean, he was quick. He was second overall, and his race pace was strong on a medium tire, even though he didn't like it. But it seems like Yamaha is going to have to rely on the rider rather than the bike this year. And he's frustrated by that. He said again that his future is still open. Yamaha says that he has offers from other manufacturers. It's not a great kind of way to start a campaign, and especially a title defense.
Yeah, but I mean, I know what you mean, but at the same time, don't forget that, as you mentioned, I mean, Fabio is in the middle of the negotiation for his renovation with Yamaha. So if you look at the timesheet, he's the rider with the most consistent race pace. So it doesn't match with what he says, because he's asking about more top speed. I want more stuff. And it's understandable. But at the same time, there's no doubt that this Yamaha is competitive. So I don't know if this is just a part of, I understand that he wants more top speed from Yamaha, but at the same time, I don't know if those complaints are a bit going a bit too far, because if you look at the papers, Yamaha will be there. So, and I would be very surprised if Fabio is not fighting for the podium in Qatar.
What we saw last year is in Portugal was the problem that Fabio will face this year with the lack of engine power, is if he can't qualify well, then he's going to struggle. And he did say in Indonesia that until the final day, he was kind of struggling a little bit to do a one lap kind of qualifying lap, and he wasn't really 100% sure why. So I think you're right. I think some of it is Fabio just trying to squeeze a bit more from Yamaha, but some of his comments were quite cutting, you know, saying that Yamaha just doesn't know how to get power from the engine. And when you look at the way Suzuki's been able to get power from the engine, it does seem to be more of a fundamental problem that Yamaha needs to fix in Japan rather than anything with its bike as such.
Yeah, there's something interesting in all of this, because I mean, if you look at the last two world champions, they are both complaining. I wouldn't say complaining, because John Mir says that he's satisfied, but he doesn't look like satisfied at all. So, and that's something that I asked to him in Sepang last day in Qatar, because he was repeating that he's super satisfied, but he looked like we were in a funeral. And I think that because both Fabio and Mir are in a, let's say, similar position regarding his new contract possibilities and how they are limited on their options. So it's quite similar what they both do and what they both say and which position they are at the moment.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how the Yamaha situation unfolds when we get to Qatar. Suzuki did actually have quite a good preseason test. Mir had a tricky Mandalika, some problems with his team having COVID, and he had food poisoning on the Sunday. But it does seem like Suzuki has fixed the problems that they had last year. They do seem to have a much more competitive bike. It's hard to tell right now, because Rins' qualifying lap was about 4/10 off the pace. But the race pace is good. I mean, race pace was quite close to Honda's.
Rins' race pace was one of the best.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a few hundredths off of what Marquez did on the Honda. So Suzuki is up there. They've got more power from the engine, it seems. And one of the most interesting aspects about that was what Rins was saying, that not only have they got more power, it hasn't affected the way the bike handles. And that's quite a key element for a bike like the Suzuki.
Yeah. Shinichi Sahara, the project leader, team manager, team owner, not rider but close, was telling that to me in an interview I did to him in Sepang, that the best thing of this update, this upgrade of the engine is that the drivability is still really, and the power delivery is still really good and really smooth, which is the main problem for Ducati at the moment.
Yeah, Ducati's test was interesting because they were good and the riders sounded happy, but they didn't quite show their hand. Like you say, the biggest problem seems to be drivability right now. They're still working with the electronics to get the engine a bit smoother, which is something that they'll probably figure out. But it's quite hard to know where Ducati is right now because Miller, Bagnaia were happy, but there was no standout kind of lap times from any of them. Luca Marini was the fastest Ducati, which was a good lap. But, you know, on race pace, Ducati were fifth on the Sunday at Mandalika and, you know, three, four or five tenths away from Honda. So it's hard to tell right now with Ducati, but that Ducati quite often keeps their cards close to the chest.
Yeah, but in Sepang, we all thought, at least me, I thought that they were a bit, sandbagging a bit because of this front device that they were using the first two, the first day on Saturday, and they didn't do it on Sunday because they were more focused. That's what they say, that they were more focused on other areas of the bike, which was mainly the engine and the engine, the power delivery. But I don't think they were sandbagging in Mandalika at all. And I actually spoke with a few Ducati members on our flight back to Jakarta because we were all in a kind of a charter. The ones that we didn't lose the flight, or the airline didn't cancel the flight, because that's another thing that is going to happen for sure. Sorry about that. And they told me that they have a lot of work to do still. So it means that I wouldn't say that they are in trouble, but they need to hurry up. They need to hurry them the works on the bike and the power delivery, because don't forget that in Qatar they will need to homologate the engine. So they need to work, and they need to work fast.
Yeah. It would be a big surprise if Ducati did kind of come to 2022 with some engine problems, because at the end of last year, Pecco was very, very complimentary of the bike. He said it was perfect. So it's hard to see them straying too far from that. But yeah, like you say, they've only got a couple of weeks, and
there's something that that is still like a question mark on my judgment, which is we haven't tested in a, let's say, normal track. So I would give them some margin still, because maybe this bike in a normal track, once we come back to Europe, because I wouldn't say Austin is a normal track, we will see how it goes, because maybe we have a really improving improvement of the package.
Yeah, for sure. Qatar as well has always been a good circuit for Ducati, so that won't help them, I don't think. And if they do have any problems, they need to figure out. Let's just finish off on sort of Aprilia, KTM. Aprilia made quite significant gains again. They look strong in both tests, and a lot of riders have been quite complimentary of what Aprilia has done. And it seems there was a fear that maybe this year, with everyone able to develop, that Aprilia would get left behind. But they look okay. You know, there's still work to do, but that's work they can do during the season.
Yeah, I think they have done a pretty good job, and best news for them is that they still can deliver them, improve and develop them the bike through the year. So if they keep going like this and they keep improving, I would say that maybe this year they are gonna lose the concessions. We all hope for that, even them hope for that, because they look really, really, really sharp, and I'm curious to see when Maverick is gonna show us his best performance level. Because if he is able to adapt himself, his riding style, to this new Aprilia, I think we're going to have some good races from him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Aprilia is working hard with Maverick. They've got Fernando Alonso's ex-trainer. They've got a sports psychologist, which is something that Yamaha was never able to get Maverick to do. So Aprilia is doing a lot of work behind the scenes to get Maverick up to speed. He still thinks he might need until Jerez before he can be fully adapted to the bike. But even with that, despite him not feeling fully adapted, he was still quite quick. So that's very, very encouraging.
Yeah. Interesting thing is that I spoke with Massimo Rivola in Sepang, and he told me that he's very curious to see Maverick under pressure, how he deals with these pressure situations, because many people thought that he was looking for this less pressure atmosphere on Aprilia. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see how he deals with this pressure when it comes.
Yeah, absolutely. And finally, KCM do look like they've made the step forward that they needed to. Especially between tests, Sepang wasn't great for them, but both Brad Binder and Oliveira were quite happy after Mandalika. If you look at the race run, KTM very, very competitive, quite close to Yamaha was doing and what Honda and Suzuki were doing. So it seems like KTM are back where they should be as well.
Yeah. But with KTM, I always try to be a bit cautious, because you never know, and they always have, or they appear to have some problems where they not expecting that, where they don't expect that. So it looks good. It looks promising, especially after Mandalika. But I think we need more time to understand, because Mandalika was a new track for everybody. So it's difficult to judge a bike only with Mandalika. And don't forget that in Sepang they struggled a lot. Brad, we spoke with him after the test and he was completely down. So I need more data to understand how this KTM will be.
Yeah, absolutely. On that note, Yuri, we'll end it there. I know you've been up for a long, long time and are in some desperate need of some sleep, so I'll let you get away.
Thank you
very much for your company, as always, and your insight, of course. And thank you to those who are listening along with us. You can catch up with all of our other podcasts from all of our various series on all your podcast platforms. And, of course, follow Autosport and Motorsport.com for all your MotoGP coverage from pre-season testing and, of course, the 2022 season. But until the next time, take care.